Now, more Ebling and You on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Again, I want to thank all the guest hosts who filled in and gave you a little bit of a treat last week, actually, with me being gone. And I have to tell you, I had a tremendous time. I don't want to rub that in, but anytime you get a chance to go to Maui, and not just for basketball, but a chance to see your son, who is coming from halfway around the globe, and meeting you there in Maui, it was a tremendous opportunity. However, it wasn't the smoothest trip, as I will tell you a little bit later in the show, and it's amazing you can go from the beauty of Maui to spending the night in Philadelphia International Airport. Want to welcome in Doug Roberts, a former state treasurer and the director of the Institute of Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University. Hi, Doug. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Jack. It's good evening to you.
Good evening to you. And I want to talk a little bit about what happened back in 1963 and some other experiences that you knew of very well because of your father's involvement back in those days. And tell us a little bit about what he did with the Secret Service.
Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate the opportunity. Obviously, 1963 was the assassination of President Kennedy. My father was a Secret Service agent for a number of years, in fact, about 30. He protected six presidents, including President Kennedy. He was in Dallas the day of the assassination, and the way that the Secret Service was organized then, and to my knowledge is still organized, is they have an overall head of what's called the White House detail to protect the president. And then, of course, because you protect the president of the United States 24/7, there are three shifts for 8 hours a day. And then that particular day, my father was the shift leader and was in the car right behind President Kennedy, and it's called the follow-up car. And he is in the passenger seat of the follow-up car. He was there and during the event. And so I would, if you would like, I would just go through what basically, to my knowledge,
I would
from
love
his
to hear.
Point of view, what happened that day. Well, he was making the turn, and the school book depository, the mm-hmm. famous and now infamous, was mm-hmm. right behind them. Mm-hmm. There were two or three shots were fired from his point of view. All the noise came from behind him, which is the school book depository. My father was, and I mean this as a compliment, but I also mean this as to something that's difficult for a child to say about us. My father was Joe Friday before I fully appreciated. I mean, it was just the facts in terms of of the event.
No embellishment.
Excuse me?
No embellishment, just the facts.
No, he was just, I mean, whatever it was. So, and he made it very clear to me that he didn't know whether or not one or two weapons were fired because, as he put it to me, the brain is not a tape recorder.
Right.
We went to, he ordered the cars to the nearest hospital. It turned out to be Parkland Hospital. They got to the hospital. My father left the follow-up car, went up to the presidential car, saw the President of the United States badly wounded. Now, my father was not an MD, but you cannot be a police officer and a Secret Service agent and not see numerous wounds in his life. He knew the president was extremely serious.
Yeah.
He left two men of his men with then President Kennedy, moved the rest of them to President Johnson, and frankly tried to Vice President, ultimately President Johnson, persuade the Vice President to leave because they did not know about what was going on. They didn't know if this was, quote, mm-hmm. a decapitation where they tried to take out the leaders of a country.
Right.
They didn't know anything. And the answer is get out of town as quickly as possible. Vice President then Johnson said no, he would not until he knew what had happened with the president. My father stayed with then Vice President Johnson. Vice President Johnson was told by my father that he was the President of the United States, but the Vice President wanted to wait until he got official notice from the Kennedy administration. I believe the gentleman's name was Ken O'Donnell, who ultimately came in and told the Vice President that in fact the President had been lost. The Secret Service agents, again, not just my father, but other agents, were in the Vice President's face, if you want to put it that way now, to get out of town. There was some at that time there was some discussion as to whether it was appropriate for Vice President Johnson to come back with the casket of the President of the United States.
Right.
And I must tell you that it was the Secret Service that really pushed that the President be put into Air Force One, because Air Force One at that time had all of the up-to-date communications equipment. Again, not knowing what was going on, they didn't want the Vice President and other than the most secure aircraft, the most up-to-date aircraft with the communications. My father did not return on Air Force One because you change shifts. My father came back on the follow-up plane, and my father was then taken to the White House. My mother and my brother went to the White House late at night and picked up my father, and I stayed home because obviously a lot of family knows where my father was.
How old were you then, Doug?
Okay, that's a good story as well. I was in 11th grade.
Okay.
So I'm old enough to know what's going on.
Yeah.
Now, and if you don't mind, I'd like to tell the story how I found out.
Oh, please do.
I was in 11th grade, and the principal of the school came over the intercom and indicated that the president had been killed, that Governor Connally had been wounded, and that a Secret Service agent had been killed.
Oh, no.
Now, that was incorrect. See, I knew exactly where my father was, and I knew that there was a very good chance that I'd lost both the president and my father in the same day. And I ran out of the room as soon as it was announced, and we didn't have cell phones and that sort of stuff then. And I got to the wall phone, and whatever cost, I put the dime in, and I called my mother. And I didn't say, did you hear the news or anything else? I said to her, is Dad okay? Without hesitating, she said, he's fine. So I said, I'll see you tonight. So bedlam is all breaking loose. It took me 3 days to ask my mother the second question, which was, how did you know he was okay? And I asked her 3 days later, and she looked at me and she said, I didn't. And I said, what if he wasn't okay? And she said, we would have dealt with it at that time. The point of the story is that the spouses of these people pay such a heavy price and bear such a burden that sometimes you don't know it.
Doug, I have heard it described that the families, especially the spouses, but also the children of Secret Service agents, especially in a detail like this, are very much like the families of astronauts. And they have the same kind of pressure, the same kind of uncertainty when the phone would ring or they would hear a report, that the trauma that goes with this is always looming.
Well, there were my father didn't just have that experience. My father was with the Vice President Nixon in Caracas in 1958, in which they tried to kill the vice president.
Right.
And if it wasn't for some of Nixon's own decisions, which probably saved his life and probably saved the agent's decisions lives as well, I mean, that could have ended up badly. So, I mean, there were many times, and the answer is yes. My parents and my mother in particular paid a price for having an agent in the Secret Service, and one of them is you didn't have that many friends. Mm-hmm. And somebody says, why? What happens when you have a neighbor next to you? What do you do for a living? Oh, I protect the President of the United States. Immediately, what's he like? What's this? And the fact is, my father was not very good at saying, you know, like, it's really none of your business.
Right, right.
And so, I mean, there's a cost.
We're talking with Doug Roberts, former state treasurer and director of the Institute of Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University, primarily today about his father, Secret Service agent Emory P. Roberts, head of the detail in Dallas when President John F. Kennedy was shot, November 22nd, 1963. We are talking about 47 years and 1 week ago this happened, and it's amazing how crystal clear the memories of people are about where they were, when they heard, and what they heard. But what your father heard never changed over the years, to my understanding, and where this grassy knoll was and all the other theories, he never bought into any of those, right?
Well, he when I asked him about that, he basically said, I'm not the investigating officer. All I'm saying is to you is I personally read his report that night, the night of the assassination.
You read it that night?
I read it. He wrote it that night. All right, and I read it that night. He probably shouldn't have let me, but he did. And he, and in the, he, his report, he says there were two or three shots were fired. And I asked him why he didn't know whether it was two or three. He probably knew then. Maybe he made a mistake and shouldn't have let me read it. But he said that the brain is not a tape,
a tape recorder.
And all of the noise came from the from behind him, which is not to say that somebody might not have fired at the grassy knoll.
Right.
But I'm just telling you, the grassy knoll was a distance, a fair distance from the automobile, and that if you used a silencer, which you could,
right,
it so decreases the velocity of the weapon that it decreases the accuracy substantially, and it would be unlikely you would use a silencer at that distance for an assassination.
Doug, what did he say about the famous scene with Jackie Kennedy trying to scramble out of the limousine and Secret Service trying to protect her?
That's exactly what happened, and the agent did get to them and got the first lady back in, but she was clearly, it was obviously a traumatic scene. Obviously, there was a great deal of carnage to the president.
Yeah.
And so it was. Now, I will say this. I do think that there's other people, and I don't think my father said this. At the end, she was literally trying to cover up the president in order to just protect him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was clearly a terrible scene that day. I mean, I'll go into classes now at the University at Michigan State, and you got to remember that not only weren't the students alive, but in many cases, their parents weren't alive.
Right. Doug, I'd love to talk to you more about this. Fascinating stuff, and I'd love to get your recollections and memories of your father.
Well, thank you.
All right. We'll be right back with more. We were talking with Doug Roberts, and we're going to be chatting with Ken Glickman, management and career consultant, our weekly Get a Job segment, coming up on Ebling & You.